With neighbors like they have, Russians to the east and Germans to the west, the people of Poland have had to develop a little bit of a protective edge over the centuries just to survive. Today, Poland is the fifth largest member of the European Union. The country combines vibrant, historic, and trendy cities with uncomplicated and traditional small towns and farmlands. But now, with Russia's war against Ukraine just off its southeastern border, some Americans are wondering if now's not a good time to travel there. To get the latest view on what it's like right now in Poland, we're joined by Cameron Hewitt. Cameron is my senior researcher at Rick Steves Europe, and he's co-authoring many of the Rick Steves guidebooks, including our coverage to Slovenia, Croatia, Hungary, and Poland. His interest in the region is stirred on by a pride in his own Polish ancestry. Cameron's just returned from updating our book on Poland, and now he joins us in the studio. Cameron, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. Dziękuję bardzo.
See, there you go.
There you go.
So our challenge is Poland is a big deal in Europe. I mean, people don't realize what a power Poland is.
It's a big country. It's got as many people as California, and it's also making itself heard and known these days. It's becoming more and more powerful and prominent within the EU.
I think a lot of English people didn't like Polish people having an influence on their rules and regulations, so they said, Brexit, let's get the heck out of here.
That was one of those factors. And, you know, someone just told me, sometimes we call these areas Eastern Europe, but I guess in England and Britain, sometimes that's used pejoratively, like it's an insult to say Eastern European. I think it's something I'm proud of when I think about Eastern Europe. But yeah, there's sort of some tension there.
So now you and I, in our work, we cover all of Europe. And I'm so thankful to let you take care of the Slavic part of Europe, Eastern Europe. You just love it. And Poland is one of your favorite destinations. What is it about Poland that a lot of people don't appreciate and you do?
Well, as you said, I have a special appreciation for it. I think some of it goes back to just that I have Polish ancestry. My grandfather, Jan Paweł Dąbrowski, was born to Polish immigrants in Chicago, actually. I've actually been back to the villages that they came from. So there's that family connection. It's also just, I find it a fascinating place with really very kind people. Polish history is very hard fought. People have a lot of pride. There's a lot of depth. There's a lot of kind of soulfulness in Poland. It's also just fun and beautiful. There's beautiful cities in Poland that are just buzzing with life. Some of those beautiful main squares and main streets and old towns anywhere in Europe, I think, are in Poland. And these days, the last several years, it's also just feeling very kind of modern and contemporary and trendy. And there's great food scene and there's great kind of entertainment and nightlife. It's just a really exciting place to travel.
You know, it's kind of exciting for me because I remember when I was last in Warsaw, I was just overjoyed with the fact that things can get better for a country. I mean, it was tough in communism and it was tough immediately after communism. And now you walk around and you don't feel that deficit in the East. It's the same as Scotland or Spain or France.
That's exactly right. And I really noticed that Warsaw is a great example. The first time I went in the early 2000s, it just felt dreary and you'd kind of find yourself trapped in these concourses under the train station. And even the lettering was very old and it felt kind of like from the Warsaw Pact. There was something very foreign about it. And a few years later, this was already probably 15 years ago, I was walking in those same quarters and I noticed that they've upgraded even the typeface. Ah, it's sort of the international airport typeface.
It's funny you say that, concourses under the tracks and so on, because that's my memory of Leningrad back before it was St. Petersburg and of cities like Warsaw, is they have these giant tenement flats that stretch forever, Moscow style, and then they got little ramshackle kiosks that'll sell you your wieners to go, you know, and you've got these underpasses where you've got a little bit of commerce, but there's really not a lot of consumerism.
Well, there wasn't, but yeah, now it's interesting. That's the other thing. All the little shops, they used to be these little one-off kind of humble, like someone's literally got a little patch of carpet with a few vegetables on it, and now it's all these kind of hip, trendy boutiques and international chains, and the whole place, as you said, it just feels very much like any part of Europe.
You know, you mentioned in passing about your Polish ancestry, but we're going to be filming together in Poland in a couple of months, and I am so excited that we are going to try to recreate the experience you had as a Polish American tracking down your roots. What are we going to do to, because you did it once on your own.
I did. And, you know, there's 10 million of us, Americans and Canadians of Polish descent. And in my case, we knew the names of my great-grandparents and the villages. All we knew was sort of the names of the two villages they came from and their family names. And so I think the key thing is I contacted a local guide and a driver, and he could translate for us. He could look up some things. He honestly, I think, just did a Google search and said, yeah, the spellings are a little different, but I figured out where those towns are, and they're 30 minutes apart. And so one morning I met him and we loaded into the car and he drove us out into the countryside. And it was a fascinating experience. We pulled up to the general store in one of these villages. And my great-grandmother's name was Wutsash. And he asked these guys standing out front drinking beers, do you know anyone named Wutsash? And they pointed in every direction. Oh, Wutsash, Wutsash. Like they recognized the name and said, oh, yeah, everyone in this town is named for that. And then we went to the village church and we knocked on the door. And the priest was a little unsure at first. But thank goodness we had this great translator with us, Andrew. And he explained what we were doing. And the priest actually let us in and he pulled out these literally 150-year-old record books. And we kind of cracked them open. And we literally found the birth and baptism records of a lot of my ancestors in these old books.
Now that you couldn't get to first base without a local interpreter, guide, translator, and driver, I would think.
Yeah, that's my first tip for people who are looking for their roots. You got to have help that way. Having somebody who knows what to do and who to talk to and can translate.
Well, those are really long-lost relatives. They don't even speak English and they don't know who you are.
Yeah.
But you found it.
We actually met my grandfather's, one of the, I don't think he's there anymore, but originally we met my grandfather's first cousin was still living in this village.
And did they knew about your parents or your family? And
yes.
So on?
In this case, they vaguely knew this cousin of my grandfather. He was like, oh yeah, I remember he moved to Chicago and, his parents moved to Chicago.
They would have enjoyed that. They would have appreciated your
visit. He was over the moon. You know, it kind of made his whole week or his whole year probably.
You know, I've had similar things in Norway and I would think the lesson is, don't hesitate to, if you are inclined to look for your roots, it's doable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Same thing. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Cameron Hewitt, and Cameron writes all the Rick Steves guidebooks to Eastern Europe, and we're talking about Poland. Cameron has just been back from Poland. We're heading off in a month or two to do some filming in Poland. I'm so excited to have you along, Cameron, on the crew, because we're going to do an hour worth of TV, 2 half-hour episodes on this exciting and happening destination in Europe. When we think about Poland as a destination, of course, it's on the border of Ukraine, and there's a lot of people nervous about that. You were right there. We've just started our tour program to Poland. We did 5 or 6 tours. You were on one of them, and everybody had a fine time. But what is the reality for Americans thinking about going to Poland but nervous about it because of the Ukraine war?
I was there in May of 2022, which was just 3 months after the war started, and I was there again just recently. So I've been there several times. Early on and today, it's all the same, which is to say people in Poland feel very safe. Being in Poland feels very safe. I don't have a lot of concerns that invasion is imminent. It's really important, I think, for people to understand that Poland is in the EU and it's in NATO. So there's kind of an invisible red line surrounding it, whereas Ukraine was very vulnerable to Putin. So just geopolitically, it's not that risky. And I will say I joined a group of Polish guides leading one of our tours, and we had 20-some American tourists, and a lot of them said the first night, we were nervous about this, we thought about canceling, and every one of us had a wonderful time. They said it was just a beautiful experience. They actually felt good about traveling in Poland at that time because, you know, Poland took in a huge number, millions and millions of refugees passed through Poland, something like 1.5 million refugees settled. Yeah. You know, somewhat long term, maybe some of them permanently in Poland. And it just kind of felt good to be there at a time when this country could really use some tourist income and some of our support. There was no concerns about safety. And I think it added a whole new interesting dimension to the trip.
And, you know, a lot of Americans, they would be inclined to say, well, what can I do to help when a country is overwhelmed by refugees and having a tough time because of the war over its border? The best thing you can do to help as a typical American, I think, would be to go there and spend some money in their tourist economy and not be needlessly afraid of something that's not really a risk.
That's the other thing that I think surprised all of us. It didn't feel overwhelmed with refugees. The numbers are huge. Walking around and driving around all over Poland, you barely, as a visitor, you barely saw any signs of a, quote, refugee crisis.
Right.
Because Poland took them in so seamlessly. People opened up. I know people personally who opened up their guest rooms. They found places for all of these refugees to live almost immediately. So it wasn't like you see a lot of people struggling in the streets. They had already kind of joined Polish society. And my Polish friends told me, you know, I said, well, I'm surprised how few Ukrainians I see. And they say, oh, they're everywhere. You don't know it because I understand a little Polish, but my ear's not very good. They said, we know because we immediately can tell the difference. And they say, you go walking in the shopping mall or up the street and you hear Ukrainians everywhere, but we wouldn't know as visitors because they've been integrated so thoughtfully.
So there's some people just selfishly, I think, are concerned. Well, not selfishly. It's because they don't want to add to the congestion, but they just think it's going to be a chaotic mess because they're dealing with such a refugee. So that's not an issue.
Yeah.
And then the safety issue, I mean, we got much bigger problems than an aborted trip to Europe if Poland is involved in that war, because that's NATO.
That's exactly right.
Then,
yeah,
so
that's a
you don't,
big problem.
That's not, if that happens, it's just going to be a whole new story. So.
And people said something to me like, well, isn't there a time that a rocket accidentally flew into Poland and we heard about it? And I said, exactly, you heard about it because it was a big deal and it was an accident. And that's why you heard about it, because that was a big story and it was quickly diffused.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Cameron Hewitt, and Cameron has for 20 years been my right-hand man as we try to cover Europe with all of our guidebooks. Cameron's in charge of the eastern part of Europe. Cameron has just written a beautiful book. It's called The Temporary European, Lessons and Confessions of a Professional Traveler. And I had so much fun reading this book, Cameron. And in so many ways, it's so insightful and thought-provoking and candid, and also gives a behind-the-scenes look at what it's like to have a job like you have, which is to try to stay up on a constantly evolving continent, how to stay up to date on that. And I remember in your book, you wrote that, I want to get a little bit going on to checking out different places in Poland here, and you wrote that when you go to Krakow, more than any other place in Europe, it's like arriving home. It's like being home. What is it about Krakow that makes you feel like you're coming home?
That's absolutely the case. I was just there again, and it felt the same way. Yeah, I mean, it is partly that my ancestors are from just, you know, an hour outside of Krakow. But it's also, I figured this out once, I think I've spent more time in Krakow than any other place in Europe just because I love Poland so much. And I've been through many times working on our guidebooks. I've been through many times as a tour guide. And it's also just a very easy place to feel comfortable. It's got this beautiful old town that's surrounded by a wall and a park. And it's just very tidy and well taken care of. And you know, it's just an easy place to spend time.
And it is. Krakow is a great place to feel at home by, but it's nice to have places in Europe where you do feel at home. You know, when I come into Europe, a lot of times I fly to Amsterdam and I don't stay in Amsterdam. I stay in the small, cozy town of Haarlem, and I feel at home in Haarlem. And I feel at home at certain places in Tuscany or something. And to have those kind of little warm places where you know the guy in the coffee shop and so on, it's quite nice. Another thing you wrote in your book, The Temporary European, was you have a, hey, I'm in Europe now moment. And we all have that, I think, when we fly to Europe. What is it that kind of kicks you into gear and makes you feel like, yes, I've traveled across the Atlantic and now I'm here? What's that like when you have that, hey, I'm in Europe now moment in Krakow?
Well, you know, I was just thinking about this because I'm getting ready to take off on another trip. The worst part of any trip is when you're just arriving, right? You're jet lagged and you're being shuffled around the airport and you're changing
planes. I'm so awkward. I feel like I've never traveled. I don't know how to use my toiletries kit.
Exactly.
I feel like, am I getting sick or is it jet lag and I'm disoriented?
And then you make it to your hotel and you drop your stuff off and you're like, all right, I'm going to go for a walk. And I always wait for this. I've been to Europe 40 some times. And every time I know when I go for that first walk, I don't know exactly when or how it's going to happen. I'm going to have this kind of epiphany of, oh, that's what this was all for. I love being back here. And in Krakow, I talk about this in my book. It's that amazing main square. The main market square of Krakow was one of the finest squares anywhere in Europe. It's just spectacular. And that was the one I described where I was so bleary-eyed from my trip. And you just walk out into that square and it's just like you're on a stage set of Europe and you hear the bugler sounding the call from the clock tower of the church, and there's a bustle of people around you, and it's just that moment where you're like, this is definitely something I can't get back home.
And it's not that you're, I'm in the town where I can see the Leonardo da Vinci painting. It's, I'm in the town where I can buy my favorite jelly cookies.
Exactly, that's right. It's just all the little mundane, everyday
things. Tell me about your Monday thing. There's something called a Prince Polo.
Yeah, there's these Polish, you know, when you travel to a place a lot, you get your own favorite little snacks.
Because I get my chocolate-covered digestives when I'm
there. England, yes, yeah. So this is, the Prince Polo is just basically a wafer cookie that's been dipped in chocolate. And anyone who's been to Poland or is Polish is, of course, Prince Polo. It's kind of like the Hershey bar of Poland. And then they have these Delizia cookies, which are these jelly cookies that are dipped in chocolate. And
so that's being a temporary European, to have your favorite jelly cookies in Poland.
That's right.
And I guess
yes.
That's why that was in the introductory chapter of your book, right?
Yes, exactly.
So it's an example of how we can all be at home in Europe. Cameron Hewitt is Senior Content Manager at Rick Steves Europe and my go-to guy on Poland. He travels frequently to update our guidebooks with a special emphasis on the countries of Central and Eastern Europe. Cameron describes lessons learned from his own travel adventures in his book, The Temporary European. You'll find a link to Cameron's travel blog with this week's show at ricksteves.com/radio. Hey, we've got a few more minutes, and I want to just kind of blitz through Poland here, Cameron. Let's say you got a week in Poland, and I'll let you kind of just sort it out. Understandably, the typical tourist wants to see Krakow, the historic capital, the cute town, and Warsaw, the muscular town and the present capital. And then if they know what's good for them, they want to see Gdansk.
That's right. Those are the big three.
Take 3 minutes and sort those three out.
Yeah, so Krakow is, if you're going to one place in Poland, it makes sense if it's Krakow. It's the historic capital, it's the cultural capital, it's the intellectual capital, it's easy to get to, it's very easy to travel in, it's super accessible, wonderful museums, there's outstanding art museums and history museums.
You feel comfortable on foot.
It's totally pedestrian, that's right. The old town is so easy to just walk around. So that's kind of the easiest choice. And then, of course, from there, a lot of people like to day trip out to Auschwitz-Birkenau concentration camp.
Which is the most powerful concentration camp experience I've ever had.
Absolutely.
I've been to many concentration camps.
Yeah, and it's only an hour and a half drive outside of Krakow. So a lot of people will take an extra day to day trip there.
Okay.
Warsaw is the modern capital. And, you know, as we were discussing, 10, 15, 20 years ago, it was kind of a depressing place, but I'm just inspired by Warsaw now. It's been completely revived. They fixed up all these parks. The riverfront embankments are thriving with people. It has one of the best food scenes anywhere in Europe. It's just a delightful big city to spend time in. Again, great new museums.
You sit on a park bench, you can push a button and hear Chopin.
Yeah, and they still work. Yeah, they put those in years ago, and I just tested one a few weeks ago. But there's these park benches around the city. This is the city of Chopin, and you sit on the bench and press a button, and you hear the music playing. It's great.
Now, I know there's a lot of post-industrial development and also complexes like food courts and so on. What's happening with that? Because a lot of us are looking for old-fashioned Europe. But of course, when you go to Warsaw, I think you should be looking for today's Poland.
This is a big trend throughout Poland, especially in Warsaw. The term they use is post-industrial. So it's like, you know, it's an old factory or an old electrical power plant. And it's this old, beautiful red brick structure that's kind of fallen into disrepair. So they're going through and they're fixing them all up. They're rebuilding them. And then they're planting these beautiful, big, glassy, like food halls and shopping zones and entertainment complexes and movie theaters. And they're just absolutely thriving in Warsaw. I'm thinking about five of them that have just opened maybe in the last 5 or 10 years. And each one has its own personality. And it's a great way to kind of see the way that Poland respects its history, but also modernizes it. And it's a great way to get a sense of the contemporary city, not just kind of the ye olde stuff.
And I think we should remind ourselves that today, when we look at some of these tragic aerial photographs of Ukrainian towns that have been completely decimated by Russia, where there's not a building that hasn't been gutted, Warsaw was the same way.
Warsaw was completely leveled.
In 1945. Actually,
yeah, Hitler did systematically destroy. He said that he was angry about an uprising there. He said, I want you to destroy every building in Warsaw to its foundations.
And the Warsaw people, the Poles, have rebuilt their historic center right down to the cracks in the walls and the funny joints before the bombing.
Yep,
so that
yep.
you have these resurrected old community. And at the same time, you got these modern post-industrial complexes.
Yeah, and there's that big, hulking, ugly communist tower that they call it the Palace of Culture and Science. And for years, that was
the
tallest building.
Moscow Gothic building?
Exactly.
Don't they call it Stalin's penis?
Yes, that's a nickname.
Come on, let's call it. Okay.
And this building was, for decades, it was the tallest building in Europe, in this part of Europe, and it was the tallest building in Warsaw. And now there's all these glass towers that are going up around it, and they just actually built one that's even taller than that just opened a couple years ago. And it's a good symbol of the way Warsaw is.
And then Gdansk. We're missing Gdansk.
Yeah, that, I think it's Poland's best-kept secret. It might be one of Europe's best-kept secrets. This is Gdańsk, which you might know by its old German name, Danzig, but this is the kind of the Baltic port city of Poland. It's where the Bain Waterway meets the Baltic Sea. It feels more like Amsterdam or Scandinavia. It's got all these
really
beautiful
does.
Old,
skilly, Hanseatic,
yeah, Hanseatic kind of. Burgers mansions and yeah. Grand kind of, you know,
so
townhouses.
Much history there. So mm-hmm. much history there. All right. Hey, well, Cameron Hewitt, thank you so much. Every time I read through your book, The Temporary European, I find new things to talk about, and we'll have to get together again and enthuse about corners of Europe that are less appreciated and how we can enjoy the taste treats. Right now, thanks for sharing the latest on Poland.
All right. Thank you. I'll say again, dziękuję bardzo.
I'm glad you said that. Discover why all who wander are not lost. That's next on Travel with Rick Steves.